Ruthie, host of Out There, here on Valley Free Radio. Tune in for stories from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond, Fridays from 4 to 5 p.m. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if we live out of state. And yes, indeed, it is Friday, May 29th, says the calendar, 2026. Thanks for listening to Out There. I'm your host, Ruthie, live in the studio with another live in the studio person here with me today. What's your name, Alex?
My name is Alex McCloskey. Hello, Ruthie.
Alex McCloskey, with it spelled M-I-K, not M-C-C.
Very important.
So, Alex, if you've listened to Out There before, you've heard me refer to my housemate, Alex, but you probably have not heard me refer to this housemate, Alex. This is another housemate, Alex, not the Alex Jarrett housemate, but the Alex McCloskey housemate. And he just moved to the area recently. Is that not true?
Very true. I moved from the Jamaica Plain neighborhood of Boston, where I lived for really long, longer than needed.
What brought you out here?
My partner and I were trying to improve our lives in many different ways.
How did you find the flow up?
I saw a posting in a housing group. And I think I applied for your side first, because there was an open room that I saw first there. But then I saw that y'all don't accept cats. And I was like, oh, that's a no-go.
Yeah.
And then I saw the posting for the other side, and I was like, oh, perfect. They want a cat.
Yeah. Cool. It's like, oh, you were looking on some Western Mass online search or something?
Oh, yeah. I spent like 7 or 8 months looking for housing out here.
Yeah. So some things that we might talk about during the hour. Oh, so you have this zine. Well, you have probably written more than one zine.
I have. I've made many a zines. I do love making them by hand or with others. I worked on this other zine, but I can't say its name because I don't want you to lose your FCC license. So for short, it was called FYD Zine. I made like 3 volumes with my friend Olivia Dang, who is a very accomplished artist and journalist in the Boston area. And that was a zine about death, decay, and destruction. And it was like a submission-based art zine. So artists would submit their art based on whatever our overarching theme was. For example, like volume 3, the theme was dreams and nightmares. And people would send us their art and writing, and then we would just like print it up all cute and put it together so that it kind of tells a story.
Hmm. Cool. Well, this zine that I have in my hand that you gave us shortly after meeting or moving in is called The Living Obituary. And, well, there's some, what I say, like political justice related things in there. But the part that for me was like, very new and informative was the part entitled Diabetic Distress, where you talk a lot about having type 1 diabetes. So maybe we'll get to that later in the show. I also have for today's show, I have some little clips. I got a little clip from Stacy, a teacher at Smith Vocational High School, Stacy and some friends were installing art in one of the tiny art boxes along the rail trail, the one right in front of the flow up near Straw Ave and the rail trail yesterday. I saw at least one other box, maybe all of them. I saw another box, the one down near Hatfield Street, also had its display installed in the last day or two. That was a beachy display about being calm and serene and such things. What else for today's show? Oh, I have a little clip from someone named Joshua in Greenfield who designed the bike racks in front of, designed and made and fabricated the bike racks in front of the Greenfield Public Library. And, I also have an interview with another housemate, Ursa, who is graduating from Northampton High School next week or sometime, or she finished her last day of school this week. So I got those things, too. So also stories and announcements. Right before coming here, I was at Cans for Cancer and then met a friend downtown and we walked back to my house in Florence. And when we walked into the yard, I was giving her the yard tour. She hadn't been around in a while and like, I don't know, probably a year. And we walk into the backyard and I'm showing her the garden and I park my scooter. As I come around the garage to park my scooter on the picnic table about 15 feet away, I suddenly realize standing there very still is a large hawk. And the hawk was very still. And so when I'm trying to not disturb a wild animal, I try to not make eye contact. I don't see you. You don't see me. But out of the corner of my eye, I was like, is that hawk really just sitting there on the picnic table 15 feet away? I think it was rabbit hunting. There's a lot of rabbits in our yard.
Do they ever attack humans? No interest?
I really don't think so, because there have been times when they've gone for the ducks and chickens that we used to have but don't have any longer because the bobcat took care of that. But there were times when there'd be hawks trying to prey upon the ducks and chickens, and literally they'd come swooping. Once one came swooping down, when it's swooping down right above your head, it looks like it's got about an 8-foot wingspan, or at least a 4-foot wingspan. And I just tried to flail it off.
How did that work out?
Well, I don't know if it was me flailing or the fishing line that we had strung up in like zigzaggedy crisscrossing about 10 feet up above the duck and chicken yard to deter them, but it got down about like 8 or 10 feet and then swooped back up. But it does have some sharp claws. I've never experienced them personally, but evidence suggests they're quite sharp.
I believe you. I'm not going to check.
Yeah, so that hawk, it just hung out on the picnic table for the whole like 15, 20 minutes. I was giving my friend the yard tour, and every now and then I'd peek at it. Yep, it's still there. Yep, probably rabbits, voles, chipmunks, squirrels. There's lots of good food in our yard. What else? Okay, well, I didn't quite plug in the right thing to play the clip off my phone. So, Alex, one of the things you talk about in your zine here, in the Living Obituary zine, is challenges of multitasking.
Yeah, you know a thing or two about this.
I relate.
Yeah, I don't think people were meant to multitask as much as we are required to in modern life. It's too much.
No.
Yeah.
One of the pieces here in your zine, you're talking about, you know, before we share with someone something that's like weighing on us or something we're struggling with, maybe we should ask them first, do you have the capacity for this right now? Do I have the capacity to do a radio show right now?
Yeah, did anyone ask you on your way in?
So fortunately, Alex, you're also a musician and you have a guitar right there.
Yes, I do.
What about playing a song?
I would love to.
All right. Save me from the abyss.
Maybe I'll take you to the abyss. All right. And I only say that because this song is about being out on the ocean.
Hmm.
And I think I should play this one because you like the water too.
Yes. We went swimming together last week at JFK.
So yeah, this is a song about being on a boat, which I only did like once on this very epic trip. And it taught me a lot about life. One of which was water conservation, because that was like such a huge shock to me when the captain was like, by the way, all the water we have to use for anything at all is what we brought with us. Mm-hmm. And I remember that was like, I had to like rewire my brain to be like, whoa, I never thought about water this way. And it kind of changed me. So, that's what this song's about. Didn't see, but the sea saw me. Didn't want nor need to be. Standing on feet stuck on this land. Wasting time for that money in your hands. wide awake, only half so much water, and only half so much water we. Watching where the bills go, cash flows. What kind of healing is this? What do I know? He's just some guy I knew trading crypto, and don't wanna be on this land. We only have so much water, we only have so much water, we only have so much water we do.
Nice.
That's it. That's my ocean song.
It's funny that, you know, water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. You're like, yeah.
Yeah.
I think you told me that you were having a connecting time with your mom on that trip.
I was because it was with my family, because this was like a family friend who was the captain and had access to this boat. So I actually had so many reasons not to go, because I was like, do I really want to spend like 10 days on a boat with my mom and dad and a bunch of like other like Polish family friends that I was like, oh god, like, you know, because anyway, whatever. I feel like their generation tends to be kind of conservative, very Catholic, very like, you know, there's just a lot to disagree upon. So I was like, can I do this? But once we were out there, it was like so chill. It was like everyone's vibe just totally changed. We were able to like have the calmest conversations about just such a wide variety of topics that normally would end in like a screaming match at home. Uh-huh. And I was like, what is that? And I wonder if it's because we were on like water. And so we were like, oh, everything's just like more chill here. And people are like more reasonable, it seemed. I don't know. Maybe I'm just imagining that. But I have been observing what I call water people for my whole life. And I noticed that people I meet who like work on the water or with the water in some way, like fishermen, or like I used to have this job working for the Carpenters Union of New England. And my favorite building trade was the pile drivers, because they were all like water people. And it was like all the people who do like underwater welding, you know, like they put on like the insane like scuba gear and like have to go like. It's actually kind of scary work. They have to go down these like long pipes underwater, and if your air cuts out, like you could be like screwed. So yeah, but if you meet them, they're like always the chillest dudes at the office. They were like always just so different than the people who work directly with like the wood or the framing, you know, like the land jobs. Like they were just so different, and I feel like I catch the same vibe from like, yeah, fishermen or people who work on boats and docks. And it's always like people who just like, I have this theory that the reason they're so chill is because they've been out on the ocean and like exposed to like elements that are like so far greater than like whatever you could see on land.
Yeah.
And unless you're like near a volcano or something. So it's like they just know that whatever it is, it can't be that big a deal. And I like that vibe.
Yeah. Huh. I'm still... When you said underwater welding, I'm like, wait, you can't weld in water, but they're in like tunnels or pipes.
I think they have their own equipment. They do actually weld underwater.
Is that some sort of electrical thing that happens underwater? Is there fire and flames, or is it
they have very specialized equipment. I actually toured their facility and they let me go in their dive tank. Like they suited me up just so I could like better understand their experience. And it's just fascinating stuff, but you know, someone has to do it. Like sometimes, yeah, you got to weld underwater. which is like a very wild concept. Like, it's like the merger of fire and water. It's like, it sounds like it's against nature.
Well, what other kinds of work have you done?
I've had so many random jobs. Most recently, I spent like a decade working for myself as a dog walker, and I would take this group of dogs. Like, I would round up all the dogs, and then we'd go on this like 50-minute hike in the woods, so that they won't be sad being city dogs. And what else have I done? I used to manage a boutique pet supply store in Philly. Worked for UPenn in their linguistics department, doing like random administrative mailing stuff. I worked in a nightclub, or I worked for this guy who owned, not owned, but he was like the technical director of a bunch of nightclubs in like Atlantic City and Philadelphia. And that was probably the weirdest job I ever had, because this guy was like a total misogynist. And the job listing specifically said, like, I'm looking for a female lighting operator. So when I went to interview, I was like, so like, why? Like, just out of curiosity, why were you looking for a female lighting operator? And he was like, because I know they won't take my job. And I was like, okay, this is gonna be fun. So that was kind of a nightmare working for that man, but it paid really well for like one night of work. You can make rent, like, you know? So I was like, and it was under the table. So I was like, all right. But the environment did not suit me, because I did not like these nightclubs or the people who attended them. People would be kind of mean.
You've also done tattooing, right?
Tattoo artist? Was also a tattooer, yeah. But I never got licensed. I was a DIY tattooer.
Do you still do that?
No, I stopped once I lost. I had this tattoo studio that I built out with a couple other DIY tattooers in a warehouse in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And then that whole building got sold to a developer, so they just kicked everyone out with like a month's notice. And it sucks, because we made it such a cute spot. But yeah, I gravitated towards tattooing because I love tattoos, but I don't want to keep getting tattooed by these like... tattooers that I just didn't vibe with. I feel like every shop you go into, at least in the Boston area, it's usually like a bunch of dudes who are like probably gonna make fun of you for some silly reason, and you know, you just generally are like, I don't want you putting art on my flesh. So turns out a lot of people feel this way, so we like banded together. And we even had like a little tattooer meetup group in the Boston area for like, again, DIY tattooers. But yeah, I started out doing hand pokes with a sewing needle and eventually graduated to using a machine.
There was something in your zine where you talked about not being able to do the fine dexterity tattoo stuff related to the diabetes.
Yeah, I still haven't gotten enough answers from medical professionals about that. So I just kind of took matters in my own hands, and I do what I can to manage that. But I do get really loud pain in my extremities still, like in my feet and my hands specifically. So I guess that's another reason why I didn't continue the tattooing, because when the tattoo studio closed down, you know, a couple of the people did go on to like found another spot in a different warehouse. And I had to dip out, because I was like, you know, I already can't take on enough clients to like justify renting a space, because like long tattooing sessions are already pretty hard on the body, even if you don't have other stuff going on. You know, like you're in like weird positions. You're trying to stretch with one hand, put a lot of even pressure with the other. Not to mention like the emotional stuff. You know, usually people come to get a tattoo because they're like trying to work through something. And I think that's why some tattooers these days have like this whole policy of like, please don't talk to me. But I can't vibe with that, because I would want to hear these people's stories. But it does like take it takes a little energy out of you. So it's just like kind of a brutal job, I think. But yeah, it got hard when my hands started getting so loud. And it became hard to do like things that I had always done, like drawing for like hours on end, or like writing with a pen for like hours on end. I can't do that anymore. Got to take breaks.
Yeah. So you have a studio here in Florence, an art studio here in Florence?
Or? I do.
Is that what you call it? What do you call it?
I don't know what to call it, but it has its own name. It's called Rust Temple. And it's a collective that started 10 years ago, actually. They're going to be having a celebration, their 10-year anniversary in August. at the building. And they used to have a spot in East Hampton, but then they moved here, I think, a year or two ago. And yeah, they had an available space. I heard about it from a friend. It's just like a cool collective of very, just a group of very intelligent, very talented, whimsical people is how I would describe all of them.
Where is it?
It is in the, I don't know what the name of this building.
The Nonotuck Mill.
Okay, yeah. Nonotuck Mill.
Right. Yeah, just right down the hill, just right down the hill from the radio station. And then near Nonotuck and Pine. What kinds of different art do you do, or projects or things do you do in that space? How big is the space?
It's a giant space. It's like the entire third floor of that portion of the warehouse. But, you know, it's like divided up so that each person rents a space to suit their needs. And so I have one of the small spaces. I think they have a few spaces open for rent, though. If anyone is interested, you should contact Russ Temple. I'm sure if you just do a web search, it'll pop up. They have a web presence. But I dream of one day renting one of the bigger spaces, but that is not happening anytime soon. Uh-huh. So I have one of the tiny spaces, just big enough for my desk and all my art supplies. And I do all kinds of things there. I can get pretty chaotic at my desk. But I keep it very organized for this very reason. Uh-huh. So, like, for example, today I was doing like three different things at once. I was working on a writing residency application because I'm trying to find some kind of money to help me finish writing my book. I started writing a book a few years ago about this like magical world of these different types of people. It's like very like science fiction. It's supposed to be for young adults. And on one side of the forest live the intuitives, who are like the people who are like very like artsy. They like feel their way through life more than anything, you know, like they probably don't own a ruler or like there's no yardstick for anything. It's all just very much like, what's the vibe today? And like they live in like tree houses that like are part, the breathing of the trees is like part of their lungs. This is like hard to explain. You'd have to read.
Gotta read
anyway.
The book.
And then on the other side of the forest are the logicals, and they're the people who like live for like acquiring data and like measured progress. And they're like also chill, but like they're just like different in that way. Mm-hmm. And then between them is this giant mushroom tower that controls like the energy of the land, but that like means different things to different people. And then there's these people, the nomads, who travel in between all the lands, and they have these highly adaptable bodies that can just like adapt to whatever's going on in like the environment. Like they can turn off their sense of smell if they need to or something. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so each chapter is written from three different perspectives: the intuitives, the logicals, and the nomads. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to like teach young adults about like being accepting of others. Uh-huh. And how, you know, everyone has a different perception of things. Like there is no like single reality, really. Uh-huh. And it's also about like interdependence, living at one with nature. But anyway, so I was working on that, and I was also working in the studio on I'm trying to make a tincture cabinet for the house, because I noticed that the tinctures are taking up space in the spice rack. So I was like, they need their own little house. So I found a cute little cabinet with a little glass door, and I'm trying to like put little shelves in it. I have to cut some wood, which is a thing I can do in Rust Temple because they have a wood shop.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, I was and what else was I doing? Oh yeah, and I was working on a tarot card for this tarot card collection that I started like 5 years ago. So hopefully I'll finish any day now. And it's just like contour drawings. I used to do these all the time, but not so much anymore because it's a lot of like coloring in, very meticulous. Uh-huh. But I'm still continuing the tarot deck, just more slowly. And right now I'm on the swords.
Can I ask you how you make money to pay rent for the studio?
Absolutely.
And the house,
I love complaining about money. Right now I live off my Patreon. So if you want to support me on Patreon... I'm on Patreon. Just look for Alex Miklowski, spelled not with a C.
M-I-K.
So yeah, I do that right now since a year ago I had to quit my dog walking business, which I miss sometimes. but not during the winter. And then there's a lot of other, I sell art, like prints, original pieces. Sometimes I get commissions for music videos, usually from local artists, like bands and musical artists and stuff. And I love doing that. But it's not like very like high production value, you know what I mean? It's like just me. It's not like a crew or something. So I'm able to charge an affordable rate.
Music videos, you said.
Yeah.
We got to talk.
Oh, you need a music video? Yeah. I love making them.
Need a pedal people music video.
You can have so many tracking shots because y'all are on bikes all the time. Get that smooth tracking shot. Unless there's gravel. But yeah, I do so many random things. It was hard adjusting to not earning money from tattooing anymore. That was a hard adjust. I ended up with a lot of debt from that. Because I was like, oh, great. There goes like half your income. Cool. So yeah, it's been a wacky past year.
Didn't you mention some other film that you're working on?
I'm also working. This is another long-term project I'm chipping away at. It's a stream of consciousness feature-length movie shot on my phone. I already have several clips. It's kind of supposed to be like funny, I guess, but really I'm just ragging on like how absurd American life is in all these different ways. So every time I encounter something just in like daily life, like, I don't know, like filling out a tax form, being like, the hell is this? What does that even mean? What do you mean? Why are you asking me if I'm deceased? Like, I'm not filling this out from the spirit world. Like, okay. Like, just little stuff like that, it'll spark some kind of idea, and then I'll just, I call it a stream of consciousness movie because whatever happens in real life that inspires a scene, it doesn't necessarily mean that that scene is going to document this experience. It just kind of takes it and runs with it with some whimsy.
Cool. Well, we're going to take a little musical break. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie, talking with Alex Miklowski here. Alex is a new housemate of mine and Florence artist, etc. And I'll play Alanis Morissette.
I'm broke, but I'm happy. I'm poor, but I'm kind. I'm short, but I'm healthy. I'm high, but I'm grounded. I'm sane, but I'm overwhelmed. I'm lost, but I'm hopeful, baby. And what it all comes down to is that every man's gotta be fine, fine, fine. 'Cause I've got one hand in my pocket and the other one is giving a high five. I feel drunk, but I'm sober. I'm brave, but I'm chicken shit. I'm sick, but I'm pretty.
Thanks for listening to Out There Today. Out There airs Fridays from 4 to 5 p.m. here on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ LP 103.3 FM in Northampton. Today, I have a live guest, Alex McClowski. Thanks for coming in today, Alex. How did you get here?
I walked.
You walked. That's the, what is the word? Supreme, ultimate, primordial.
Meditative state.
Alex, you have another song you could share with us?
I do.
Yeah. We're lucky to hear your music live in the studio. It's rare that I have a musical guest. I'm mostly yakety yak. So take it away.
Okay. I'm going to play a song about, I guess, my mom. But really, it's about chronic illness. Yeah. So it's kind of a sadder one. It's stalling by the end of the day. It reeks, but it doesn't have courtesy to say it's been here all. Things in boxes, they're up off the floor. Mom always has the best advice, and I know if you put things in boxes, they're up off the floor. And then you won't have to look at them no more. Gets called a wimp every day, and its little heart it limps, but it doesn't mean it's okay. Thank you. put things in boxes. Step off the floor. Mom always has the best advice. And I know if you put things in boxes. Step off the floor. And then you won't have to look at them. No more.
Alex Miklowski. What's the name of that song?
That song is called Boxes.
That was going to be my first guess.
But it used to be called Stale.
Stale?
But then other people just kept calling it, you know, Boxes, Boxes, Boxes song. And I was like, all right, the people have spoken.
So, Alex, you have been a tattoo artist. You paint, you draw, you do collage, you make zines, you make films, you play guitar, write poetry, you're writing a book. I don't know what all else you do, but like, how did you get to be like this? I mean, like, can you talk a little bit about, like, I don't know, how's your interest in these sort of things? How'd you figure out who you were in the artist sense of the word?
I don't think I still know. So maybe this is how you find out. Maybe I'm trying to find out. But also it's probably ADHD and other things. Probably stems from the mental health world. Yeah.
When did you get your diabetes diagnosis, and what was that like for you?
That was in 2013, and I was 26 years old then, and it was really scary. It was kind of a mind trip, and then it also triggered another illness, but that one's mental. So I wasn't really sure what was going on, and I still look back, and I'm like, I still don't really know what happened during this particular three-month period, but luckily, I'm a great archivist. I always keep my old journals, so sometimes I look back through the journals from that year and the following. Sometimes it's hard, and I'm like, all right, I don't know if we need to go back there, but sometimes you got to hold on to old journals, because it's like, how else would you remember that you were this whole other person, you know? You have to remember, like, the former selves to know where the future selves are going.
Huh. How did things change for you before then and after then?
Like, before then, I was just always working, and I was kind of a maniac. Like, literally, my friends would call me a maniac because I would, like, I was working, like, three different jobs. I was living in Philly. The most important thing on my mind was being a drummer in a garage band. Like, you know, I just, my priorities, I guess, weren't in favor of taking proper care of myself. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I would just, like, make a box of pasta to last for, like, 3 days and be like, there's dinner. Like, no vegetables, no nothing. Anyway, so I'm not surprised that my body was like, you know, you're being kind of mean. And also, I was just, like, working a lot of different jobs so that I could afford to spend the rest of my time playing drums. And because I thought that's, like, what you had to do. Like, I don't know. That's just what I was told you had to do if you're trying to make it work doing your respective creative stuff. But that stuff, like, rarely makes you a living. So you have to do, you know, work and then work after work. So it's like, I think I was just, like, overworking myself. So that was the previous life. And then after the diagnosis, I was like, I am terrified of ever having a job again. And that's when I started looking for alternative ways to earn a living, being like, maybe I should just work for myself, because I never have faith that any employer would be able to allow me to meet my needs throughout the day. And there's many, you know, like, like, sometimes I have to sit down for half an hour because I'm getting, like, a severe low. And it's like, I could try to work through that, but it's like, is it going to be good work? No, it's going to be like, not enough oxygen in your brain type of work. Like, you're probably going to make mistakes and have to fix them later. So it's like, you should probably just sit down for that half hour. So yeah, I just kind of gave up on trying to work for somebody else, because I was like, I don't think this is, and I was also scared it would give me another autoimmune disease, because people say they come in threes, but I don't know if that's true. They say if you get one autoimmune disease, you're more likely to get a second and a third. And I've investigated them all, and they all suck. Like, there's no good one.
Yeah. Chronic illness, like, That's a lot.
Yeah. You have to like relearn how to live as a human. It's so like wild in your head or like in the internal experience. Like,
yeah. Yeah. In the zine, when you talk about just like daily things you have to be conscious of, be aware of, and actually do regarding the insulin and and just like, what if you forget, if you're distracted, you're excited, you got a lot of things going on and you just forget. It just seems like too much sometimes.
I forget all the time.
And then what happens?
I pay for it the rest of the day. But I feel like I've just said a lot of negative stuff about it. And I'm not one of those people who are like, oh, put a positive spin on your chronic illness, because I hate it when people do that. I do. But I did reflect on this recently and I was like, you know, one cool thing, if I had to pick a cool thing or try to dream up a good thing that came out of managing the specific illness, was that it really did teach me a thing I just did not have any concept of before in life, which was discipline and like moderation.
Uh-huh.
I had to like, I kind of believe my soul's journey in this lifetime is to just learn moderation. Like,
uh-huh.
like don't overwork yourself. Like, don't like, like this thing is cool, I'm going to do it all day long. It's like, no, you got to take breaks.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about like the day-to-day stuff of how you have to plan ahead and your like meals, and just so that people, I mean, a lot of people know more about this than I do, but I'm sort of ignorant about a lot of these things. Just that people have to be aware of like, you know, the thinking and planning that you have to do for like the insulin or meals and that. So to be healthy and not spike or too high, too low.
Yeah, I guess I should give the disclaimer, though, that most type 1 diabetics I know these days are on an insulin pump. So I have to give the disclaimer that I am not on an insulin pump. And I made that choice. I was on one for like a few years, but I was like, this isn't for me. And I went back to manual injections. So because I made that choice, which I'm still sticking with, but it comes with more planning because the insulin isn't tethered to you, so you get less flexibility. So you do have to operate in these very strict time windows. You can't stack your insulin, which means you injected yourself and then within an hour injected yourself again, because then you will get a low. You can't microdose your insulin with a pump. You can actually tell the pump, hey, give me like 0.65 units of insulin. But you can't do that with a pen. You have to round up or down. Mm-hmm. So it's like your control is less precise. You can't automate things. Like a lot of people on pumps will say, there's all these different things you have to monitor that regular bodies just monitor themselves. Like there's something called dawn phenomenon, which happens somewhere between like 3 to 5 a.m. depending on who you are, which every body like does this. It's like your body trying to like naturally gear you up for the day, being like, all right, we're about to like wake up and like do a bunch of stuff. So like I'm trying to get your body ready, so your liver will release all this glucose into your system to like, you know, get you up and at it. And, you know, a normal human working, like a working pancreas will be like, oh, I have to compensate for that, and releases insulin and you don't even have to think about it. But like, I have to do that. Like I have to drive the stick shift pancreas. So I have to think about that. So sometimes I would set alarms at like 3 a.m. being like, okay, I'm going to take a couple units. But that also changes based on so many other factors, like, you know, if you're a person who menstruates, that's going to change like the week leading up to, the week of, and the week after. So you really only get one normal week a month, like while you're menstruating. And your ratios change depending on like all this random stuff. Like, did you get enough sleep? Because if you didn't, you know, you're probably going to be running kind of high the next day because you're going to have some insulin resistance. How much did you exercise the day before? How much are you planning on exercising? Because you have to prepare for exercise, because you can't have too much insulin on board for like exercise, because then you will go low. But some exercise stresses your body out so much that you actually go high. You know what I mean? Like if you do an intense sort of exercise, it's so silly. There's like so many little components. So yeah, in a day, it's like, you got your dawn phenomenon, you got your foot to floor, which is when you actually get out of bed. It's like the spike in your blood sugar that just happens. that you have to compensate for. And, you know, I like to eat breakfast. It's my favorite meal of the day. Yeah. But, you know, you have to take your insulin. I like rarely remember to take it 20 minutes before eating because I like food. And sometimes I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to be eating. Yeah, like, right? I want to see what's out there.
Right.
So, like, things like a buffet or even a potluck can be kind of a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, man, like, I just, I want that and I want that, but I already took the thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll be like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to have crappy sugars for the rest of the day. I don't care. Because, like, you can't live like a nun all the time, you know. Huh. But it does kind of demand that.
When you have crappy sugars, like when you say you pay for it, like how do you feel? What does it do?
If I have high blood sugars, I feel like really tired, very lethargic. Especially if they go over 300, those suck. If you have sustained high blood sugars, the signs leading up to essentially a diabetic coma, it's called like diabetic ketoacidosis. But this is in like extreme scenarios. Like, this is actually why I went off the pump, because one time my pump failed and I was like out in the middle of nowhere and I didn't know how to fix it. So my sugars were skyrocketing and I started vomiting, which is like, I knew the first sign of like, we're about to go into coma mode. Like, and I was really scared and I was like, oh, I don't want to ever be on a pump again, because if I was on manual injections, I would just be like, oh, I'm getting high. Let me just take my pen out and inject myself with some more. It's not that complicated. But with this little machine, it's like, who knows what's going on in there? So, you know, technology fails sometimes. So, so it's scary in that way. It's kind of precarious, in my opinion. But so, yeah, high blood sugars, I would say very tired, very lethargic, kind of irritable. Low blood sugars are the ones that get really wonky, because if it falls too fast and too low, like really weird stuff could start happening. Like, you could start hallucinating things. Like, one time I was in a CVS and my partner was trying to get me glucose tablets and he was just like, you just wait right here. And it was one of those CVSs that still had, like, you know, that like late 80s, early 90s print of carpet that has like all these squigglies on it. And it looks like it's like from a Nickelodeon show or something. Anyway, the squigglies were like getting really wild in my perception of them as I was like almost clocking out. And so yeah, the extreme end of a low blood sugar is that you pass out, because you're not, what happens with a low blood sugar is that you're not getting enough oxygen to your brain, which is why they say it's very important to fix that one as fast as possible, because you don't want to cause brain damage.
Yeah.
While with the high blood sugar, I feel like you got some time before you,
yeah,
you got plenty of time before you enter a coma.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing about that. I think about that sometimes, you know, like Monday night potluck or like meals, random food. Like
snacking is the best.
Yeah. So I have some questions about your music. Do you have, like, if people want to hear your music online, is there a place they can find it?
Absolutely. It's on Bandcamp. And the name of my project is Reclama, which is, should I spell it?
Yep, you should spell it.
Okay. It's R-E-K-L-A-M-A. And that's a Polish word. It means like advertisement, which I always thought was funny. Because growing up, we would watch like Polish TV that my parents would like get. Uh-huh. And in Poland, and I think other European countries, they like tell you on TV when the commercial break is coming. And they'll be like, and now, reklama. And then the commercial start, which I kind of appreciate because, you know, they get kind of sneaky with that when a commercial just pops on and you're like, am I really watching this right now?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, it's like they want to mess with you.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's on Bandcamp. And yeah, I think that's where all of the stuff lives. And I've been doing that project for like 11 years now.
Mm-hmm. Do you do live gigs? Are you looking for live gigs?
I think I'm ready to play live gigs again. I spent like all of 2025 not playing any, but I think it's because in 2024 I played too many for my body that gets angry at me a lot. But I would love to play more gigs. I used to play with full band, or that was a thing I was trying out in the last 3 years, because I used to perform solo for this project a lot. And then I was like, my friend was like, you should make this a full band thing. And I was like, I guess. But I didn't know because I was like, I don't want to be telling people what to do. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like, if I'm going to play in a band with people, I'd rather we all write the songs together because then it means something to all of us.
Yeah.
And so one thing I didn't understand about doing full band for a solo project is like, but these are like my weird personal little diary things. Like, yeah. It's just awkward, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think that was working.
Yeah. Well, I want to save time for one more song before Democracy Now! Comes on at 5. But a couple of announcements. There will be Bike Lab tomorrow, Saturday, May 30th, 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at 12 Northern Avenue. That Bike Lab schedule is online at pedalpeople.coop/bikelab. Also, the annual Sojourner Truth Day event will be this Sunday, the day after tomorrow. That's the 31st of May. At 2 p.m. at the corner of Park and Pine at the Sojourner Truth statue on Sojourner Truth Drive. Sojourner Truth Way. Sojourner Truth Walk. It's Sojourner Truth Way. I'm sorry, I said the word drive. We drive a bike. We drive bikes. Anyway, I think that's all I'll say about that. I've been talking with Alex McCloskey. McCloskey. I lost it in my mind there for a minute. Do you have another song ready?
Yes, I do.
All right, play on.
This is one of the first songs I wrote for this project, like 11 years ago. It's called Money and Time, and it's me complaining about capitalism. Rest in peace, rest easy, never mind the clocks, never mind the hands, gripped you by the neck, you're pleading that this never goes away.
Thanks, Alex McCloskey.
You're welcome.
Thanks for coming on out there today on Valley Free Radio.
Thanks for asking me to come. It's very cool to see this studio. It's very magical. I'm very excited.
People can hear archived editions of Out There. I think this is show number 360 of Out There.
But whoa.
Yeah. People can hear archived editions online at weatherbeard.com/outthereArchive. And if you type in weatherbeard.com/out there, you'll go somewhere sooner than you should. Finish typing in archive, and then you'll get the updated archives. You can also listen to any shows on Valley Free Radio from the past 2 weeks, at least any local shows, by going to valleyfreeradio.org and clicking on their player archive edition, whatever that's called. Also, I think Cat Barry probably wants me to announce it's at 6:30 at the Elks Club, music, free music and dancing. Sorry, I don't remember the band. I can't look it up right now. And what else? There's lots of other little announcements. Yes, next Thursday is the first Florence Thursday night free concert in front of the Florence Civic Center by the Lilly Library. That's Thursday night from 6:30 to 8. And those will be happening every Thursday until the end of August, I believe. You can find a lineup of the different bands playing on a sandwich board in front of Full Circle Bike Shop, I believe. Or you can probably find them posted at Cooper's Corner, posted around town. Of course, you can go online and find it too. Don't forget about Farmers Markets Saturday in downtown Northampton on Gothic Street. Tuesdays in Northampton, Wednesdays, Florence Farmers Market, 2 to 6 p.m. And what else? In case people didn't hear already, the Sojourner Truth Day event is this Sunday, May 31st at 2 p.m., where they'll award the scholarships to local seniors graduating from public high schools who are involved in social justice types of things. And yeah, if you want to contribute to the Sojourner Truth Scholarship Fund, you can go online and figure out how to do that, or show up at the event with some cash. There will be a cash jar at the event, and there's usually snacks too. And I saw they had set up a big tent, which made me think somebody might think it's going to rain, or maybe someone thinks the sun's going to shine real hard. Either way, there's protection from weather already planned for. So if it's raining on Sunday, don't let that discourage you. What else can I say? One of these days, I want to talk about Redistro in Greenfield. They collect things like donations, food, clothing, bicycles. They're looking for bike parts, and they make them available to people who might need them. Oh, you know what, Alex? I forgot to ask you. Someone wanted to know if you speak Polish.
Tak, ja rozmawiam po polsku.
Yeah.
Chętnie.
How many years did you spend in Poland?
Not many at all. I moved when I was 5, but both my parents are very into teaching and stuff, so we had to go to a Polish Saturday school in Brooklyn growing up.
Oh. Well, bye. Thanks for coming. Can you translate that?
Do widzenia.
Thank you.